So during this dogfight, out of the corner of my eye, I saw a shadow. Like, here's a shadow, and there's an airplane down here somewhere making that shadow. And I noticed the direction it was going. Had to be an airplane. But it's just a shadow. I couldn't see, and he had to be low, and I looked and looked, and but I was busy with an ME-109, so I got the flight together and asked him if we polished off, I think, 2 out of the 4. And I asked my flight, did you see anything else down here flying? No. Okay, get up here. And we're down low now. Remember I said it was a bright green, dark green day? So we're flying along, line abreast. I thought he was going west, so pretty soon I saw the shadow again before I could see the airplane. And then we come screaming up to it, and I see this. He's right here, and his shadow's right here. And I said, oh, my God. Obsolete Battle of Britain Heinkel 111 bomber. And I sit down low, like shooting fish in a barrel. And I thought, just here, there's another easy victory. Then I thought about my flight. And my wingmen very, very seldom got shot, get to shoot when they're flying with me. And so I said...
what a bastard, man.
So I said, get into practice gunnery formation. And as soon as I said that word, they knew what that meant. We're going to get to shoot. And when you do practice, you got your target being towed here, and you get into echelon left, the lead goes in, makes a left-hand pursuit curve, fires, comes over here, and then the second guy does the same thing, the third, fourth, and they get into right-hand echelon, and then you come in and you make a right-hand pass. So you get a lot of practice doing that. Anyway, these guys, as soon as I said get into practice gunnery formation, they almost collided, getting over there, getting into formation. And so I go in. He's down low. I fire. I get one engine smoking, pulled up. Noticed that he had a gunner in the back. Second man came in. I think he silenced the gunner and got strikes on the other side of the wing. I'm the leader, so I'm scoring them. And number three comes in, and he really did a number on the other engine. And he comes up. I score him. He's got hits. Number four was a new guy. He was okay, but he was a new guy.
Says it all.
And he goes in and he fires every round of ammunition he had in that one firing pass. And you don't do that with 50 calibers. You got to fire a few second burst. If you make a long burst like that, you burn out the barrel, and pretty soon you can see the... If you have a tracer, you can see the thing comes out, and it comes out like this. You're not going to hit a thing. But I scored him, too.
You gave him a mercy kill?
And now the guy is in real deep trouble, and perfectly timed comes a big meadow up ahead of him. And he bellies it in. He couldn't bail out. He skidding along the thing and then hit something really bad on the left side, and it tore the wing off outside the engine. then the fuselage just kind of spun around like that. So we had two big fires going on the ground. And believe it or not, two guys got out of that airplane. And one of them was just standing there kind of looking at it.
He didn't gesture your way?
Going around like angry bees up there, you know. And the other guy takes off. And there is absolutely no place to hide. But he runs. He's running and running and running. I said, oh, God, I'm going to give this guy a thrill. So I came down like I was going to strafe him and went right over the top of him, pulled up, did a roll, and then I took the flight home. And that's how you get a quarter of a kill.
All right. I know you guys are here. You know what a privilege it is to hear Bud. You know, he's alive, he's talking about it, he's sharing his experiences. So I think a big hand for Colonel Anderson.
Oh, thank you. Now, please sit down.
Great. All right. You guys okay if we talk about the Mustang a little bit? Just about the airplane. Jack is going to talk really about the design of the airplane, what makes it special, what he knows so much about, and is a real student of this. So a big hand for Jack Roush.
Thank you. The story of the Mustang really starts in April 1940 when the British Air Purchasing Commission came over. This is more than a year before D-Day when the U.S. got blown into World War II. There was a lot of conflict in the population about whether we should be pacifist or whether we should be aggressive with this thing that's going on in Europe again. But the British were trying to find manufacturing supply or sources for airplanes. They before the Battle of Britain, but they could see the storm clouds brewing and knew they were going to need more airplanes than they could build themselves. So they came over to talk to North American, who built the AT-6 trainer, and they built the B-25 bomber. And they said that they had no experience with fighters, but they'd like for them to build a fighter. They'd like for him to accept a license from Curtiss and build the P-40 Warhawk. And the North American group, the engineering and the management both, had a number of ideas about what the future of fighters looked like, and it wasn't a P-40. So they negotiated a chance to do a proposal for a brand new airplane. And the British gave him 120 days, which was the same amount of time that was allotted for retooling the Curtiss P-40 in a North American plant and be able to build the obsolete airplane. And anyway, in 102 days, not 120 days, but in 102 days, they had an airplane that was ready for an engine, and they had to wait 18 days for the Air Force, or for the Army Air Corps, or for the Purchasing Commission for the U.S. Fighters and military equipment to give up an Allison engine. The Allison engine relegated the Mustang to being a ground support and an observation airplane. It really couldn't engage in conflict over the mid-teens. It had a single-stage, single-speed supercharger that ran out of air when the fight was above 20,000 feet. In fact, it was above 30,000 feet a lot of the time as the war later developed, because the German airplanes, both the 109 and the 190 that followed it, had adequate supercharging to go in the high 30s. But the Mustang, the so-called NA-73X proposal for the British couldn't do that. The North American people had some good ideas. Edgar Smoot was the chief design engineer. He was German born, and he had his eyes on everything that was being done and around the world. The laminar flow wing that the Mustang is known for was really explored earlier by the Japanese and the Russians. So they had the benefit of some information that had been published by the Japanese and the Russians. They had the NASA North the National Aviation whatever the rest of it means research activity that was doing doing some things to minimize the drag. They also had decided to use a V12 water-cooled engine, which gave you a cross-sectional area about half the size of a big round Pratt & Whitney engine, and it took half the fuel to realize the same performance. So they had the V6 profile, or I'm sorry, the V12 cross-section profile. They figured out that if they put the right kind of diffuser on the exit of the radiator duct for the for cooling the engine, for the coolant, they could generate some amount of thrust. The claim was made that the scoop that they had would balance the thrust so that there was no penalty for having a radiator hanging down there. I don't know if that was true, but that was one of the things they talked about. And they wanted to flush rivets throughout. So they wound up with a airplane with an airframe that was substantially less, maybe 50% less drag than the P-40 or the P-47 that was also airplanes of the fighter planes of the day.